Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome to the Shrimp and Sivrette Show, a member of the Nation Network of Podcasts and delivered by DoorDash.
Hey, Danny boy. How you doing, buddy?
Good, Bob. Where are you at here? It looks like your background's a lot different. What's going on?
Yeah. I'm in Bled, Slovenia right now. I'm at my combine camp and we're at this, it's a cool little, sort of like bed and breakfast place. We got all the kids stay here on one little lot so we can be together, play some games. You get like a ping pong set up out in the yard. There's a pool area to kind of get the group together and get some camaraderie. So it's a little bit of different backdrop than when I had, back in Riga. So I hope everybody can bear with it.
What's the age, like how many players do you have there and what are the age groups?
I got 22 players and 5 goalies. And it's a little wide range with one guy, Bobby Metz. He's going to Colgate next year. He's an 01. But the majority of the group is 03 to 06. So Bobby came and agreed to come, but I brought him in to kind of give the kids here that a view of a Division I hockey player, Division I defenseman, to kind of give them a gauge to for them and see what that looks like, what kind of dedication Bobby has, what kind of player he is, and how he works on the ice. But in the sense of this combine setup and showcase, so to speak, setup, it's a chance for players to get kind of get seen. So it's been a really interesting week. It's been a lot of fun and opening the door the way we did the camp. Maybe a little bit long story long, but last year I got asked to come and do a camp here and coach these kids. I said, yeah, I came in, and at the end of the camp, a lot of players came to me and asked for help for placement and helping them find teams. And I didn't have answers for them. I couldn't really execute that. So I thought of like, how could I create something for these kids and help them out? So this year we ramped the camp up. We made it a combine where they got tested on ice, off ice, and we made it sort of like a showcase at the same time. So they get tested on Monday, Tuesday, and then we have from Monday to Friday, we have 10 practices on ice. And then on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, we have games. And those games are live streamed. And I put it out to a lot of scouts, and Elite Prospects was awesome with that. We stream it on their YouTube channel, and people can tune in and see these kids. And then with the camp, what else we did was made sure that every kid got an Elite Prospects premium account. So those accounts are attached to the stream, and any scout that's watching, any team that's watching, can click on that player and get their information and where they played last year, their stats, also the testing results from the company Athletics. They did the combine setup, their fitness testing and their on ice, off ice testing. So it's a lot of information for people to get kind of like that. And I told the players this year, I said, I'll provide this dance floor, but it's also up to you to show up. I can only do so much. So it's a great opportunity for the players, and it's been fun to do it. I did some color commentary on the last couple of games. So start my career there. Yeah.
Where are the players coming? Like, are they all local or are they coming from all over like Europe area? Like it's new for me being over in North America. We have a lot of bodies in condensed area in Ontario, but are players flying in for this, or is it just a centralized spot that it's a hotbed for hockey players?
We had 3 Americans come in. Ty Bashaw, Mike Bashaw, and Bobby Metz came over from the States. And then we have five Latvian players come in, came down here from Riga with me to come join us. And then a lot of Slovenian players and a couple of Austrian players. So it's a little diverse group, and it was really not marketed to a large scale. We had the group from last year, got the first right of refusal, and then we got that number, how many yeses. And then we wanted to have it around 20 to 22 players at 22, just in case there was injury, because they are live games, like, and, you know, at that age group, 16, 17, you know, they're running around hitting and stuff. So you never know what could happen, but yeah, so that's the age brackets there. And again, like, Bobby's outside the scope a little bit in 01, but again, I brought him in here with a purpose. So the other kids are looking for places to play. And this, I think it's a cool time now in June to give people some teams and scouts a chance to see where they're at now. Because again, at that age, 15 to 18, like, there's some kids that's, you know, have some development there over the off season, 2 months after the season or 3 months after the season, whatever, hit a growth spurt, hit a confidence spurt. It's good to have those live films, live game films for people to see where they're at right now. Cause this is, you know, at this time is when people are calling around for players and trying to find places to play, whether it be NAHL, the USHL, or NCDC, like leagues like this. So it's good to have that fresh footage, fresh game film for those players when they're, you know, reaching out. You can say, here's my film from, you know, middle of June. This is where I'm at. So yeah, so that's the kind of the scope of what we got going on here. And it's been awesome. And it's fun to get with the kids and do the development side of it as well. So it's not just a showcase, you know, we get a ton of practices. So I run film sessions with them in between on Tuesday night after Monday's game, went through the film. And that kind of helps me as a coach. Like, when we do the drills in practice, everything's game specific and there's a reason behind it, you know, practice with a purpose. And then when I have that film, you know, to see, like, okay, this is why we do those sprints from the hash marks into the neutral zone, start crossing over like McDavid, like in the game, we get there and we don't do it. You see it? And everybody's like, yeah, you know, it kind of really hammers the point home. And that's when we say development camp, like, you're literally developing their, you know, their game right on the spot. So, oh, and I know you're doing something quite similar in London, aren't you, this summer with, you know,
we started it, I think last year. When there was minimal ice, we were sort of shut down from the pandemic, and I just sort of wanted to put all the, you know, players locally, I guess, like whoever can drive in, that were elite on the ice together, just to, you know, sort of get game preparation. It almost sort of emulates what we did as pros, you know, like, we took most of the summer off the ice. We worked obviously on some individual skills and stuff like that, but majority of the stuff was off the ice that we worked on, strength, mobility. And then as we got closer to training camps, heading off to the NHL, we would cluster a group together and we'd run practices and scrimmage and things like that. So I sort of just made it like a little bit of a bigger scale. And in that same sort of age bracket of, we work with 07 or 08s to 03s. So you got under 15 all the way up to players in the OHL that will play. And I just make like a little league. There's contact, but it's not like anyone's laying anyone out open ice. It's that as if we were to play against each other, you know, I'm going to be a little hard on you in the corner and not trying to hurt you or anything. It's just like, this is how we're playing the game. So it allows all the elite players to come. And we're not just strictly males. Like, there's some elite females that come on that are heading off to NCAA that obviously fit right in. And it's pretty fun. It's exciting. I haven't started yet. We usually jump on the ice mid or late July, about 6 weeks prior to players heading off to their respective teams or training camps. So, but yeah, it's fun to see them all. And you know what, it's unique because around here, you usually are just stuck with your own age group. And I know for myself, you as well, I'm an 85 berth and I played a lot with 84s and I would jump on the ice sometimes with 83s. And then as I got into the OHL, I was fortunate enough to be invited to a European skate back in Burlington, where all of the guys that play over in Europe, Mark Juris was the one that would have headed it. He invited me out. So I was in well over my head, right? I'm a 14, 15 year old kid and these guys are playing in Switzerland, like lighting it up. Right? So, but it made me learn to defend these guys well, right? They're faster than me, smarter than me. And I think I'm trying to do the same thing here in London, where you're on the ice with different age group players, right? You could be on the ice, you could be on the line with a player a year younger and 3 years older and going up against 2D that are 3 years or 4 years older than you, right? So you, at this age, I think the pace is strong enough. It's not like you're out with someone that doesn't belong there. So everyone has the same goal of obviously helping them in life through hockey, whether it be OHL, NCAA, or go as far as they can, CIS or something like that. But yeah, it's fun to organize it and watch the kids interact, and I can interact with them on the bench. I have my brother and a few of his buddies who are NHL linesmen and referees come out, as well as some OHL guys, to serve as our officials. And I can sort of jump around from bench to bench and, you know, serve as if I'm coaching them, where there's little things I can sort of help with, whether it be supporting the puck a little bit more or things that you just want to, you know, sort of like what you're doing with the video aspect with the players. But yeah, it's coming up, and it's just fun to get on the ice again with the kids, see them have fun. And I try to do it a little bit differently, where each player gets a black and white jersey, and I have about six teams worth of players, and we interchange the schedule, but I encourage them, like, I don't have black team in this dressing room, white team in this dressing room. I just have it open, so you can be getting dressed with someone that you're going to be playing against, or like, because at the end of the day, like, these are the players that you'll eventually be playing with or against throughout your steps of your life, like locally and training with. So I see there's no problem in being in the same locker room as someone that you're going to go on the ice and play a controlled scrimmage and against. But it's cool. It's awesome that you're doing that over there. Like, I know we're fortunate in this area with a high density of players in a small area. So I draw pretty well from, you know, not too many kilometers outside of our city, but it's pretty cool.
Yeah. Hockey hotbed. Yeah. That place is unbelievable. What you have for the players there. Yeah. Kids are lucky, especially then with someone like you to be able to give back and coach your knowledge and experience, giving back with that kind of, it's an elite level crew that's around London. You know, there's so many good players, and the youth programs are stacked now too.
Yeah. And it's only getting better. Like, you can just jump on my site, DannySavert.com, and look at our NHL Pro Skate. I do the same thing with the NHL guys. It's not a league. It's just, there's about 25 guys that are on it that, again, train, do their own stuff. And then as we get closer to them flying out to their respective teams for training camp, we put together that, you know, practice schedule and scrimmage schedule with the select crew that are out there. But there's some marquee players, and there's a lot more coming up. You know, like there's a lot of players that are up for the draft that are local players, and it's almost like it keeps expanding. So it's good for hockey in this area, obviously, because it allows players to be on the ice with a lot more talented players in a bigger cluster. Because I remember when we were pro or turning pro, it wasn't that many, right? You had, you know, Brian Campbell, Jason Williams, I think Boyd Devereaux was there. Alex Henry, like there was a small number of players that I think they enjoyed having us there, our 05 team players that were graduating, because it gave them, you know, 18 players or 15 players to actually run a high tempo scrimmage, whereas in a select group it's difficult to do that. So it's encouraging for this area. It's fun. There's a lot of strong development and good players, so I'm happy to spend my time in London here.
Yeah, it's cool. I set it up. We did a best out of three. So obviously we played three games, and Bowers been great. They were they gave us sticks for the winning team gets sticks. Cool. Every kid gets a new stick. So I kind of gave it a little carrot, make it competitive. So it's also tough, right? Like, some of the kids have been off for 2 months, like the season's over. And that's, I'm trying to harp on, you gotta rev it up. You know, this is almost like playoff hockey. We're showcasing and there's scouts watching and teams watching. Like, there's some urgency to it. That's tough too, because we're here in Bledsoe. It's beautiful. It's summertime. You know, like, how do you turn that on? So I try to think of ways to make it competitive as well and give them something to chase after. Yeah, and it's been great. A lot of chirping. The team black won the first game 5-1, the Beacon, and they're cocky, run around. And then red won last night, pretty big, 6-3. So it's been cool to watch that too. I like to see that. It's just like the NHL playoffs right now. You know, like Colorado spanked Tampa 7-0. and Tampa bounces back the next night, you know, reverses that in 6-2. So it's, you know, how you respond. And it's important for these kids to realize that now, how you respond, because, you know, again, the first game was a 5-1 spanking. So, but they came out in Team Red last night was awesome. It was good. It was a good, very physical game. They came out physical, hitting each other, you know, making hockey plays, not playing shinny hockey in the summer. Again, like one guy trying to go end to end. And, but, you know, that's the thing. Teaching these kids in this setting too, it's, they all want to be seen. They all want to go places. And when you have that, like these summertime habits, it's important to get rid of them. Mm-hmm. It's important not to do them ever, you know, if you can. That's tricky about summertime skates is you can get bad habits. Like, again, you get in the, some kids get on the ice and they just scrimmage and it's literally pond hockey. One guy gets the puck, goes one way, doesn't score. Or if he does score, but then the other team grabs the puck and somebody goes end to end. Like, that's not real hockey. Yeah. So it's important to have good habits. And this setting allows me to kind of be that, show them where, what that means exactly, you know?
And it's awesome. Like, it's the same. I don't think the younger player realizes it, that when the pro skate, and I keep our schedule open, like you can come and watch our pro skate if you want. And it's good like you just made that comment, because some players just will float around and try to score or whatever. Like at the pro level, at the pro skate, if one of these guys were to cherry pick, like the rest of the squad is going to just lose, like both teams, like, dude, this isn't hockey, you know? So yeah. In my league that I have, I try to do the same, right? If a player is sort of cherry picking, I'll make sure I go and say, hey, like, this is not good for anyone. If you keep this up, but to the player's defense, they're all really respectable and play the game the right way. And like I said, it's open to public. So, you obviously are doing it online, so it's easier for people to see from their home. But with our area, we have a lot of junior B and OHL teams around that I do know that there's been people that have come and watched just to see, you know, let me get a second look at this player and maybe he, you know, maybe we can offer him a spot or something like that. So even though it's not a tryout, you're preparing for your season or your training camp, there are eyeballs on you. So it's always good to get into good habits. But like you were saying in the Colorado game too, like that was a really dominant performance by a team in a playoff series. Like it could have been a bigger score than that, unfortunately, right? And then I think everyone almost wrote off Tampa after that. It's like, oh, this is going to be over in four, right? And then they come back home and have a strong performance. And then we get to game four. They started the game really strong, obviously 30 seconds in. And then Colorado started to give it back to Tampa and end up tying it up, forcing overtime. And then obviously there's a bit of controversy in the overtime goal. When I watched it live, I just thought it was a quick transition, right? Yeah. Puck comes back, puck gets out. They were Colorado had a bunch of chances in a short period of time. And it was just sort of like, oh, Tampa's just hanging on. They flip it out, right, to obviously avoid the icing. And their goalie stepped up, Kemper stepped up to start a quick transition. I just thought, oh, that's a quick transition. And then they attack. Kadri makes a good play through the triangle and eventually scores. I didn't even know it went in. I thought Vlasovsky made another save. But it wasn't until after the game when I was watching the press conference live is when Cooper sort of alluded to the fact that there was something wrong with the goal, right? It was almost like made everyone, you know, it's like you're a treasure hunt trying to find what the issue was.
Really,
right?
Bizarre. Is that like dramatic and like what happened? Excuse me, I didn't get to watch it live. Obviously it's late for me, 6 hours ahead where I'm here in Slovenia, but that press conference, like, that was kind of one of the first things I saw on social media. Like what happened? So what was, you know, what was it that was so controversial? I still don't see what happened.
Yeah. So I don't think it's the issue of when the puck goes in the net. Like I've seen the videos or screenshots online where Kadri's like scoring. And I think McKinnon's like just stepping off the bench. Like I don't think that's the issue. Like, cause you're out of the play. It's not a factor. I think the biggest issue is not knowing how long they had six guys on the ice. So when the puck gets flipped out, obviously Tampa's trying to get some bodies off and Colorado's doing the same. Byron goes back to grab the puck, which the goalie jumps up and makes an outlet pass. So you got a D man in the screen, or is going to be out of the screen if you stop the play in the neutral zone. Mm-hmm. And when it comes up to Letkinen, then he goes to make the pass to Kadri. And there's another player cutting through the center ice circle. And then as Kadri's about to get the puck, you see MacKinnon sort of sprinting out of the zone at the bench to stay onside. But in that frame, you see five players, and then you know that Byron is still back in his D zone, right? So it's almost like you wonder, it would be nice if there was a picture frame of behind the, like the net, the hole, the ice on that transition, because it'd be interesting to see where MacKinnon was when whoever the player that was supposed to jump on for him jumped on, because when he just gets out of the zone to stay onside and he's straddling the blue line right at the bench, he's not a factor of the play, but the closest player to him is like at the center ice dot, which that's a big advantage to a team. Yeah. Right. So I think that was more the issue. And obviously it's not a reviewable play. So it almost asks the question, like at some point, should it be, obviously you can't rewind time, but moving forward to make sure that it's not that, I know the game is so fast, right? So to ask those four officials to do the head count on both teams, like in a neutral zone transition, when it's almost like a wholesale line change, like that's tough to do. I think the situation happens a lot during games. It just sort of got magnified because it's obviously Stanley Cup finals and overtime, and it resulted in a goal. But I haven't seen the behind the net shot of the neutral zone play happening. I've just seen what we saw from the camera footage, you know, from a TV viewing. But
yeah, it's buzzing right now. It's Cooper was devastated by that goal. I mean, obviously, it is crazy because that's 3-1, you know, and
I don't think, speaking as an official, I don't think you want to have an impact in a game like that, right? Like I think there was two penalties aside, and in the third period there was a trip that wasn't called, which fine, and then it went back the other way, and there was another trip for the opposing team not called. Like I know they probably want to call it the same all the time, but like as a player, I think you have to respect the fact that when it's in the third period and it's a tie game, it's pretty much over, you're in overtime, next go win territory, right? Like you don't want it to turn into, you know, soccer, no disrespect, but like get a guy into the 18 yard box and then take a dive or whatever, and then it's like, oh, penalty kick, you know, the game's over now, you know, it's decided by the officials. So I'm with them on that. Like, let the players play the game and find the who is the better team. I think Colorado was trending to be the better team, obviously, in the overtime. It just I'd be interested to see how long they had too many men on the ice for, because you know, MacKinnon's a centerman, he's getting off. Kadri's a centerman, but he never took any faceoffs during the game. So was there a confusion on who was supposed to go, and two guys jumped for one? And, you know, so it unfortunately for Tampa, they lost, and there's some controversy, but yeah, it'll be a big hill for them to climb. Obviously they've been there for 2 years now and have seen a lot of adversity, and they do have a lot of experience, but I guess we'll see. Colorado will be pretty buzzing. They're up tempo team. Yeah, Tampa seems to have a lot of injuries. They blocked a lot of shots. They do block a lot of shots, but in the game, in game four, they blocked a ton of shots. So it'd be, you know, everyone's sort of banged up, and, you know, I'd like to see it go more, but I guess time will tell.
Yeah. It's amazing. Kadri coming back after having surgery, but 3 weeks ago, 18 days ago, whatever it was. It's kind of one of those typical playoff stories, you know, coming back for anything, battle through anything. That trophy's everybody dreams about winning it. So it was pretty cool to see him get that goal. Then, you know, last St. Louis series gone through what he went through with that stuff and the fan stuff. And he's had a tough playoff in some regards. So watching, you know, it's tough to see that going against Tampa with our buddy there, but it's another cool story. Kadri being a London guy, stepping up in that moment.
He skates with us too. Like he works hard. It wouldn't surprise me. Like he looked like he didn't miss a step in the game. Right. And he had gone, half a month probably without playing a game. Like that's hard to do. Like you saw when Point came back, it's tough to jump right back in it. He looked like he probably, you know, the people don't really realize, but he probably was on the bike a lot and like grinding things where you're just assuming like, oh, I'm just going to put the jersey on and go out and play. No, I bet you he punched the clock a ton on the bike to keep his, game pace up. And he has had a good season, good playoffs, due for free agency. So it'll be interesting to see what happens for him. But yeah. And I guess that just goes to speak to injuries and depth, right? Like I think, you know, not to rub salt in the wound, but I think a player like him would be great in Toronto. Well, they had him, right? But he's more of, you know, your third line center pest, hard to play against. He had a great offensive output year this year. And you know, he's done well in the playoffs for them. You know, I'm pretty happy for him, but yeah, and then speaking of free agency, little hockey related, but what's the take on that LIV golf tour over there? Like I have my own opinion. What's your opinions on guys jumping to go over there? Just curious.
I think it's great for the golfers. It's such an opportunity in some regard for financials side of it, you know, and then it's you kind of look deeper and dive deeper into it and why the pushback's there and what the morals and what the morals are of the backing of the league. And then I see what the pushback is, but
yeah, it's hard
to not disregard. I don't want to disregard that, but if I'm looking at like as an athlete being able to get paid that much money, it's hard to say, I don't know. I mean, that's just so much money. Like you can sit on your principles, but if you're being honest and you're an athlete and they're like, come over here, I'll give you $200 million. I'm just being honest. Like, how do you, that's tough to say no. Like it's so much money.
Yeah.
You put so much in your trade or whatever and what you do as an athlete. And then that's crazy money. And like, where do you see that?
The only thing I'll say is like that the players that are going over there, they, like you said, you've put so much in your trade, but a lot of that trade was opened up by the PGA, right? Like we see the PGA tour, but there's like Pan America tour, Canadian tour, like Corn Ferry tour. There was web.com tour, like the seniors tour. Like there's a lot. It's not just for the top, whatever, 180 players in the world, because they have to get there somehow. Right. And so PGA does a good job of having different tours to allow players to play and get better competitively to hopefully get to the PGA tour. Right. And then to have your guys that have come up all the way, just sort of jump. And I'm with you. It's a lot of money. That's a lot of money. Like these guys are heading over there to earn more money than what Tiger Woods has earned playing. And he's arguably the best player in ever, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's tough to, you know, the principles of it and what's going on over there as well sort of could probably play into factor of some guys' decisions. But I don't know how long it will last, to be honest, but
I'm curious I don't know the depth of what the problems are of the PGA. I don't know their inner politics and why the, you know, I think it's sort of Greg Norman and a group kind of going at it. Phil Mickelson's really been, you know, on top of the leadership team, so to speak, of Jump. I don't know the politics. I don't understand why there's so much frustration. At least from outside looking in, like PGA Tour looks awesome. It's great. It's in a great spot. And from my view, I mean, there's great young players and you got, you know, Tiger Story's always there. Phil's around, you know, always in and around it. I don't know. I didn't realize that it was so fractured And then I guess once you start diving a little deeper into it, they're, you know, they don't have ownership of their own media rights and stuff like that. So they can't monetize off it. So that if they were allowed to, then I guess they wouldn't have to be chasing the $150 million ticket they're getting offered, because they could, again, monetize their talents. So I guess I could see a little bit of frustration there, but it's wild, you know. And then I think was it Koepka just joined? No.
Yeah. And I think, Answer's on his way too. Like, yeah. I'm with you on the, on your own brand type thing. Like, but it's just that they've given you the platform, and I'm not against like a monopoly, if you want to call the PGA monopoly. Like, I like healthy competition. I just almost question the, you know, you're literally going over there for the money, right? Which I guess everyone works for a living for money, but at some point those principles not weigh in and say, you know what, these guys sort of got me here. See ya. You know, I don't know. It's tough to say. I'm surprised that as many guys have jumped ship, to be honest, but, and there might be more that go. That's a big carrot to dangle in front of players, right? Like, you're a corporation just to be going over there. You know, you're worth a lot of money. But yeah, no, I just was, I know you like golf. I like golf as well. So yeah. I was just curious what your thoughts are and what it was like over on that side of the water, the European take on it. Cause I know it's a hot discussion here in North America.
It's not that big. You know, golf is not that big here. Such a smaller league.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Small countries, there's limited courses. You know, Latvia, there's only like 4 courses. The other problem being, Danny said, I don't speak any languages, so I don't know what they're saying. So I'm always in the blind. But yeah, the golf group that I play with in Latvia, they're just all about the money, really. Like, these numbers are crazy. Yeah. And I guess, you know, even one Tiger turned down apparently was close to $1 billion. It's nuts.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. So that's what everybody's kind of in awe about. It's crazy to see. I love seeing that. Like, right before the US Open, Koepka was like, I haven't even thought about it. And then like 7 days later, he's on the ship over. But it's interesting. Definitely interesting.
Yeah. And then since we're on the complete non-hockey topic, I just got back from Montreal, which obviously is a great city. for the Formula One event. And like, I don't know if you've ever been to one. I wasn't a huge Formula One fan. I sort of had to watch that Netflix show to get into it a little bit. I'm a little bit more on the NASCAR side of things.
Yeah.
But it was a really cool event. Like, Montreal did an awesome job. Their subway system was on point to getting a ton of people in and out. The cars are like in real time so fast.
Really?
They're making turns at speeds where when you're watching, you know, on TV, you see the ticker, you know, 155 kilometers an hour or whatever. But like, when you're actually watching these things turn at that speed, you're like, how is that not spinning out or whatever, right? And it was a really cool event. I went down with my brother, had a pretty good time. We went to some practice sessions and qualifying and then obviously the race. But and then obviously being in Montreal just sort of leads us into the draft, right? And then Montreal having the draft, first overall, new GM, talks of trying to trade up more to get another player, make a splash. What are your thoughts on that? Like, what do you, as a team, GM ownership, to trade away an asset, you'll probably have to trade away a marquee player or a semi-marquee player to potentially acquire like a number, jump up in the draft to like a number two spot is what the talks were. They're trying to get 1-2. What do you think the conversation is there for management and ownership on getting rid of a player who has a ton of experience and plays a huge part of the team, potentially to acquire a draft pick for I don't want to say unknown player, but he's not solidified at the pro level yet, but one of the better players or best players at their age group or draft eligibility. What do you think is going on there?
I mean, it's interesting. The Slovakian kid in the chain, right? There's a lot of the talk of the top prospects. Interesting. Call them assets because that's what they are coming in. I think it do some, and I don't know, because it's a new era, right? Like, these young kids are coming in, so it's not so much of a gamble anymore. Still a gamble, but I think having that new youth would be exciting. Having those kids come in. Two draft picks, but the two high draft picks coming in at the same time could be, I mean, that's a huge shockwave. And then having them grow together, develop right on the spot like that, they probably come in at 18 and get that experience within a year or two. That's exciting. And I think they're very good players. You know, it depends on the draft and what's available, right? So there's some great players in this year's draft. So I don't know. I think personally, like, Montreal's not loaded up per se. I mean, they got a few young guys coming up. And obviously, Caulfield is unreal, and he's on his way to be a superstar. I think adding a couple more young guys would be, if you could do it in one draft, why not? I think now would be a good time to do that, in my opinion. But yeah, like you said, the experience of it, like, you can't take that away. Like, it's see how they respond to that top level NHL, playing against top pairings, you know, getting going in slumps in the NHL. What's that like? How you rebound back from it as young kids? Like, that's the stuff that you got to like figure out how they're going to respond to it. But you know, if you make a move like that, you're going to really kind of, you're saying you're building your team around them, and you're going to give them every chance to not every chance, but they're getting every support being possible to make sure those kids have, you know, have that. So they're not falling flat in the face. But I like it. I think it would be, I like to see that, you know, just out of the ordinary kind of move. Just something different, you know, kind of, we just saw something of the same down in Florida where the coaching carousel kind of continues. You see the same stuff over and over again. Something like this would be, I think it'd be unique, different than what we've seen in the, you know, a long time. It's like Vancouver, the Sedin brothers, right?
Yeah, that was cool. And yeah, I guess that was a splash too, right? The other thing is like, come draft time, when you're selecting, like, that, you know, looking at Detroit, when they took Moritz Seider, and everyone's sort of like, what is this guy? Where, why did you? And then now he just won the Calder, right? Like, it takes a lot. It would take a lot for management to, you know, see all these rankings, which again, as a team, you're going to decipher who you want anyways, right? But to see all these rankings come out and the player that you are decided to take is slotted X number of spots way, way down, not way, way, but, you know, to be able to sort of say, you know what, we're going to stick with it. Like, and then the funny thing is, Eisenman comes out after and sort of says like, you know, give this guy time. He's good. And then he wins a Calder, right?
Yeah.
Then, which obviously brings me to my next sort of point is the voting for all these awards, right? You see all the voting come out. And so I sort of ran through the numbers and see he won. He had the obviously a healthy majority of first overall picks, and they end up slotting five players, right? You put five players on the ballot. And I think Zegras out of Anaheim had the second most, but and there was a good draft. It was a good rookie class, right? But then I go down the list and I see like Timothy Liljegren, who plays for Toronto, had some fourth and fifth place votes, which almost makes me question. Like I watch a lot of hockey. I wouldn't. He's a good player. I'm not knocking him. But to say that you're one of the top five rookies,
yeah,
like Swayman, like there's a ton, like Janero in Nashville, like there's a ton of, there was a lot in this class. And then, so I almost wonder, like, when can the people who vote, when can their names become public? Because like, to me, that seems like it's not, you know, like, the same question can be had with McDavid and Edmonton. Like he wasn't on some of the vote, like he didn't have, and is he not the best player? And like, I know Matthews won, so he had a better year, but is McDavid not the best hockey player in the world right now? You know, and
for you in a question.
And so I mean, for people to leave him off the voting ballot, like, so he's not even considered in the top five in the NHL. Like I would love for whoever voted that to be able to give their explanation.
Yeah.
You know, like what is it? Are you from Toronto and you want Matthews to win? So you're not even going to get him a vote. You're not even going to give McDavid a vote to sort of swing the table in your favor. It was puzzling to me to see like McDavid not unanimously in the top five for sure. And then to see some players where I'm like, really? Someone thought he was like the fourth best rookie in the NHL? With all the available, like where's the accountability maybe? Like, how do you fix that? Like, I know you're not trying to shame people, but if you are one that is voting, you should be able to back what your reasoning is, right? Why don't you have McDavid on one of the top five players in the NHL? What was your reasoning? You know?
If it's not a good enough reason, take the voting rights away.
Well, that's what I mean. When will you ever find out, right? When will you ever find out who actually voted, who didn't vote McDavid to be one of the top five players in the NHL, or who voted some players as, you know, the fourth or fifth best rookie, when it's like, really? What's, do you not, maybe you're incapable of, you don't watch enough hockey to see, oh, there's a lot better rookies. And I'm not trying to knock the player. He's a good player. It's just, you're not really close to being one of the top players. So who with the voting rights decide, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like yeah. It's just puzzling to me.
Yeah. Right? Faceless vote.
Well, that's what sort of it is. Right. And then, and you just alluded to the coaching change, right? You have a coach in Andrew Burnett, who's was in the running for coach of the year, and in that same offseason, it sounds like they're going to hire Paul Maurice, who I think is a really good coach, but it's like, wow, that's news.
Yeah.
Like, I know he was there for as an intern, but he was good enough to be voted by the same people voting that he's one of the top three coaches, and then sort of like, you know what, we're going to bring someone else in just to, and I don't know what his take would be on it. Like, do you stay in the organization? I know there was talks of him having a bigger role, or like a, you know, a more marquee role, whether that maybe is president, assistant GM, something, but like, is that maybe not like a little bit of a slap in the face? I know he's there as an interim coach, so he was just filling the hole a little bit, but
yeah.
don't know.
Yeah, it's hard to believe. Yeah, that he's now out of that position with being amongst the top three, and now it's pack your bags or go down a floor. You're now on the 41st floor. How do you bounce back from that? That was very surprising. Even though I think their playoffs were a little bit disappointing, losing in a sweep manner. For us, we were talking about it. Didn't see that coming, but still have that regular season. Who knows? Again, probably don't know the workings there. Maybe. I don't know. I don't have answers, but I don't know how that happens. It really makes you scratch your head.
Yeah, hard decisions. Really tough decisions to actually sit down and say, you know what, we're going to go this way instead, right? But I know we had talked about 3-on-2s to transition back into hockey. I know we had a little bit of a break there and talking golf and Formula One, but I thought Tampa did a really good job. Colorado's a really good rush team, and I thought in game 3 Tampa did a really good job off the rush. I think the first goal, Cirelli we'll call it middle drive. He was attacking with speed, sort of kicks it out to Killorn and then continues on it, which it's almost like a 2-on-3 type play. And he just sort of puts his head down and drives through. Killorn makes a nice little play through to him where that's when he ended up scoring. It looked like he was trying to go forehand to backhand and sort of whiffed on it and it went 5-hole short side. But just to touch on the being on taking it, you obviously were in the rush a lot more than I was. I was more of a trailer, but just the thought process of an attacking forward off the rush.
Yeah, coming off the rush for me, coming to the new, it starts a lot in the neutral zone, and what I see a lot of is in the neutral zone, sometimes players, they kind of go on their own and they try to attack on their own. What I'm a big believer is if you got time and space to the neutral zone, if you get your teammate up there, say we're coming down on a 2-on-2, it's a lot about teaming up with that, coming over to that guy. If I have the puck, I try to come to that guy. If that guy's not coming to me, I'm coming to him. So we can pick on the D, and that's a great way to cause confusion for the D, because then you make them have to communicate. You change, when you start moving laterals to the neutral zone, that D's got to, have good footwork, or, you're on a 2-on-1. But I thought Tampa, they do this great to the neutral zone, cross and drops and zone entries. Is something that they're very good at. Saw the one in game 3. I think it was the second goal with Plot coming through the neutral zone, slashes across and meets up with Kucherov. And then you can see this play evolve. I think the main point of that is, and what I see a lot of players do, again, what I just mentioned, was in neutral zone, they just get the puck and they just sprint. Sometimes it's a little bit more about like basketball, where you're crossing, setting picks, setting screens, and you're moving off of that just so you can get, confusion in coverage. And I just feel like Tampa does this unbelievable. They did it great in game 3, like I said, and they get a clip of that to show exactly that goal. At the end of the play, Stamkos makes a great pass across, but if you pay attention to the coverage, it started the messing or the confusion in coverage starts with Palat getting lateral to the neutral zone, meeting up with his teammate, distracting that defenseman. And then it becomes okay, who's covering who? Next thing you know, Palat's wide open back door. So you see how that happens. And that stuff sort of that's what I think about when I talk to players, having a game plan and you understand what you're doing, understanding what is effective and, the rhyme and reason behind this kind of stuff. For me, it's explaining that. In the neutral zone, if we both just sprint in a straight line, you stay on your side, I stay on my side, we both aren't just on one-on-ones.
It's easy for me to defend. Yeah.
What's that?
It's easy for me to defend, right? If you're not if you're not isolating me or I'm like, okay, sure, go wide. I'd love for you to just go wide and I just take you wide, right? But yeah.
Yeah. Once that forward starts coming lateral, right? Now you're kind of trying to keep up with the play. You change in that attack angle on the D, and once they start moving lateral again, now you start gaining space, time and space away from them, and you can't be pinned in against the wall. And that's once you can get in the middle of the ice, and once you can enter the offensive zone through the middle of the ice, that's where you gain a lot more control as a forward. And Tampa does it awesome. They're a very good skating team, and they're also very creative. And they play off each other very well. And I think this goes into cycling too, which I think I've talked about it before. It's a lost art, crisscrossing, setting picks and coming off each other. That's what I've been doing teaching here at the camp this week, was a lot of that, the cycling plays, and like how to set that up, how to set your player up instead of just always thinking, how can I get to the net? It's like playing together. Okay, I don't really have a chance here. Like, how can I get this, my teammate, a better, you know, a better look, set a pick, let him have that free space, let him come into that area, get threats to the net. So, you know, this goes sort of in the neutral zone as well, that's where I'm getting at. And this play that we had in game two, I thought it was great for kids to learn from, you know, and how do it, what does it mean? What is the, why is it effective? And what are you looking for? Again, you're looking to team up with your teammate to pick on one of the defensemen versus each staying on a one-on-one. If you can do that, I think, you know, Danny, you kind of touched on it. It's very tough for you to kind of track that. It makes it harder for you.
Yeah. I just have to make all kinds of decisions. Like, I have a checklist of things that are processing in my head as I'm taking the rush, and I'm getting sort of pushed over to my partner because the other player is going over there as well. It's like, okay, is their next player in the zone going to be, is it going to be now a 3-on-2? Are they buying time for 3-on-2? Can he pull up? If this guy drives through, do I take him? If he tries to set up, like, there's all kinds of things that is just so read and react that are happening. And I think that's what the confusion happened on the goal for Tampa was, and those are two good D that you're going up against. And I think Rantanen was the third guy back, right?
Yeah.
And I think the, you know, if you can create that subtle decision-making or gray area that just happens in a split second, I think you saw it in the goal, because I think Rantanen had to play a little bit more zone and just hand off the player and then take on Palat. And I think he makes a little late decision. You see him try to put his leg down to make the block, and it ends up getting through to Palat. But, you know, a 2-on-2 that was essentially a 2-on-3, you know, we'll call the back checker or the third guy, that turns into a 2-on-3, which then turns into a scoring chance for Palat in the hash marks, was all created because of, you know, trying to have confusion. And obviously those guys play together. They've been together for, you know, a long period of time, so their chemistry is there. But yeah, it wasn't just I'm going to bury my head and drive wide, or I'm going to go and pull up. There's a reason and a purpose to their madness out there.
Yeah. So it's fun to watch them play together and crisscross and find new attack angles to the net. They're a fun team to watch. So it's been effective for them in the playoffs. It was effective in game three. We'll see what happens next game. Hopefully they can pull a miracle out here. But it's little plays like these that, again, we would try to bring to the show and like break them down, give the people the details, whether it's coaches, kids, understanding the why, you know, because if they see this on the, you know, there's also time and place for this stuff too. The thing is for Palat here is that he has so much time. There's not a backtracker here. You know what I mean? So there's that gap between the backtrackers or the back checkers. So this is where, you see that time and space, you check your shoulders, so you get time and space. Now is that, okay, I can get lateral here. I have a little bit of freedom to do that. It's not so risky, instead of forcing it in there. Obviously, if there's back pressure there for you to try to drive into the middle would be, you know, kind of not smart. But when you have that time and space, getting lateral, do it.
and you're trying to create a gap, right? And that's where, like, you're doing something with a purpose, and they're, you know, like I said, they were attacking on Makar and Taves, two very good D. Makar won, you know, top defenseman in the league, and on the other side of the ice is Hedman, right? Worthy enough as well. Two guys who command the ice very well. And something that I wanted to touch on a little bit was, people probably don't realize it, but like when you shoot the puck will spin, right? So if you're a lefty, you're going to shoot the puck and the puck is going to grip on your blade. Well, hopefully you have tape on your blade that's causing the grip, and as the puck leaves your blade, it's going to be now spinning. I'm a lefty. It's going to be spinning counterclockwise. And if you're a right-hander, it's obviously going to do the other thing. And what I wanted to touch on was the as a quarterback defenseman, a D man up top, that's going to distribute the puck usually to one timers. There's a lot of guys that play in those positions, but like, for example, a Hedman to Stamkos pass. When you look at Hedman, he's a left-hand shot passing it to Stamkos, a right-hand shot. When Stamkos goes to shoot the puck will need to spin clockwise as it leaves his blade, right? So when you see Hedman make a pass to Stamkos, he gets his hands in front of himself and almost just like Spanx or like shuffleboards the puck hard to Stamkos with minimal to no spin, so that when the puck makes contact with Stamkos' blade, it allows him to create his own spin, right? Whereas another situation looking the same would be Ovechkin in that same shooter spot and John Carlson beating the quarterback D, who's a right-hand shot, right? He doesn't do that same anti-spin motion pass. He has no problem ripping the pass. As he rips the pass as a right-hand shot, the puck's going to be now spinning clockwise, and it could be spinning quick, rapidly. But when Ovechkin goes to shoot it, he's just going to keep that spin going, right? And just, I know from, you know, me and you, we're both left-hand shots. So I know for when I had to load up a right-hand shot, I had to make that shuffleboard pass minimal spin. But for you, I could spin you the pass, right? Because yeah. I know you're just going to keep that spin happening, right? Whereas I guess what I'm getting to is if for D-man anyways, in the offensive zone, a lot of times D-men will swap hands or load up someone for when they draw back, go D-to-D one timer, right? So I guess just having the awareness of who you're passing it to for the purpose of a one timer. Like obviously if you're passing the puck anywhere on the ice, just pass it hard and spin it, it's going to stay flat. But if you're passing for the sole purpose of a one timer and I'm a lefty passing to my left-handed partner, who's going to be in a one timer, I can spin it because he's going to shoot it hard. If I'm passing it to a righty, if I'm spinning it, when he goes to make contact with the puck, he's trying to spin the puck the opposite way of the spin that I've already created for it, which usually results in like a fan shot or a knuckleball because the blade just, there's not enough space on the blade and contact with the puck and the blade to be able to create that. So you end up just negating it. So for players who are trying to load up someone for a one timer, realize what hand you're passing to. And if it's the opposite hand, try to pass it with minimal spin. And if it's someone with your own hand, you can pass it with as much spin as you want. But just a little things that maybe aren't taught as much or widely known, but there's a reason why when Hedman makes that pass to Stamkos, he doesn't just snap it over or like sweep it over and create spin. He sort of just like punches it, you know, just to like less spin going to a righty for that situation is better.
I had a guy, my goalie coach here, Luca Gratchner. I played with him in Red Bull. And he told a story last night, literally about this from Thomas Raffel. He's like, I got to tell you a story. One time Thomas Raffel was talking to Luca and he goes, Luca, this shrimp guy, I don't know what he's talking about. He comes to me and he says like, hey, Thomas, when you make that backhand pass, can you spin it the other way so that I can shoot it? And Raff was like, I don't know what the hell he's talking about. He's like, I'm just trying to get it there. I don't know. He's kind of like, it was funny. That kind of made him, but like a lot of players don't think about that. They really don't. It's not taught. It's not really thought about. It's more thought like just snap it hard and get it there. But this little detail is really important because on contact, like, when you used to tee me up, it was money, man. If I timed it properly, I hit that puck and I could rip bullets. And then there's other guys that would pass me in the same spot that you were in, and they'd zip it, and that spin screws me. I can't torque on it, and I can't control that the accuracy of it, and it had a really hard time getting it up off the ice. If you go back to our highlights, like I was going shelf with those one-timers from the top of the circle because it was set on a tee for me, and that spin was proper. So, again, like you said, I can just continue on with that. And that gives me a better chance. And, you know, I think it's really important to understand as a passer and for players to understand this, it is a huge detail because this starts to add up to assist. If you put that in the tee for the guy, you're starting to get apples, right? And it's not a huge thing to do. It's not to say, hey, you got to pass this puck over everybody's head and land it perfectly on someone's tape. We're saying like, before you let that thing go, put a little emphasis on this, right? Like it's not a huge ask. And for people that are listening or players that are listening, like think about it, try it out and see, get a guy and do some one-timers, grab a pile of pucks and change the type of spin you put on it for him. And you see if the difference is.
It can, exactly it also sort of leads about. To like tape jobs too. Like I see a lot of, I've had a few kids on my team, they come out with like in practice with jokes or tape job, like almost like Jamie Benn, just like a little sliver. And I'm like, you got to be able to spin the puck to do anything. Like you can't saucer, try going out with no tape on your stick and trying to make a saucer pass. It's just going to like be quacking, you know,
fiberglass on the puck. You have to have sick hands, like sick hands to be able to play fiberglass on puck. It's not easy. I'm sure there's other ways, getting wax all over your stick or whatever. I don't have the solution to that, but I know that it's hard without tape on your stick, rubber on fiberglass. It's crazy. And
the other thing too,
to do what Jamie does, like that much tape, he's super skilled. And if you watch when he's handling the puck, it's always on that little sliver of tape. So he's very, very good.
But and even some of the guys that just have like the little toe tape job, they actually run like a piece of same colored as their blade, black, along the heel to the toe, and then they go over their toe in white, like a traditional tape job. But you need to have that friction to be on the to make contact with the puck, or else, you know, it's just near impossible to handle the puck. So if you're and also like fresh tape is crucial as well. So don't run your tape job for half the season and it's like it turns into a cinder, you know, it's just like a clay, yeah. It's a clay blade. But
yeah, it's wild. Anyways. But, small details.
And it's good. And I think from our feedback, I know from feedback that I've gotten, I'm assuming it's the same as yours. There's a lot of people that really enjoy the small tidbits that we try to produce. But I guess just to wrap it up, I'm, you know, there's not much hockey left in the betting front. I did see there was an option to bet for the first overall pick. Right. And there was heavy, heavy, heavy odds for Shane Wright to be first overall. But would you have enough confidence, or do you think this is something that could be bet on also? Because it is bet on, but obviously Montreal knows who's going to go first overall. So is there not some sort of conflict of interest maybe there? Like the outcome is going to be determined by someone choosing. It's not like a game or a coin flip or, yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like the odds were heavily, heavily favored to Shane Wright. I think he will go, but then there was a few articles out saying, oh, it's not 100% yet, but would you have enough money in the bank to bet tines on him knowing that, you know, your distant relative is selecting him first overall? Like I'm just saying it's a different odds manufacturer when the outcome is going to be decided by someone's decision, you know. Yeah. it's not a horse race, it's not a coin flip, it's not card table, it's not an outcome of a hockey game or a goal score. It's we choose you, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I just thought it was interesting when I came across it. I didn't touch it because you would have to put so much money down to make a nickel on Shane Wright going first of all, and I sort of assume that's the given. He's, you know, talked about that. I watched him a little bit, not a lot, but talked about that he's, you know, sort of a spitting image of Patrice Bergeron. So, you know, that's a player. It's my age, arguably the best defensive centerman in our decade, but I'd be jumping on that if that's the similarities.
Yeah, no, he's had a lot of hype for a long time. So I don't know about the betting side of it, to be honest with you. I don't know. I don't like that either. That's not much fun. You know, for me personally, I like the action part of it. You know, that's, I don't know if that's, like you said, it's a choice. So it's, I would stay away from that personally. Yeah. You know, there's not much fun in that for me.
No, I like the live betting. So I guess with that, Shrempy, I'll let you get back to teaching the kids overseas there. I think you're doing an awesome job. I know a lot of people in the hockey world really respect you. So I look forward to talking and hooking up next week.
Awesome. It's great seeing you, brother. See you in a week. Thanks everybody for listening. Check us out at the Shrimp and Civrette Show on Twitter, the Shrimp and Civrette Show on Instagram. We have our own handles as well. I'm at Rob Shrimp and Danny is at Danny Civrette. So check us out. Thanks for tuning in. See you guys next week.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Shrimp and Civrette Show. Don't forget to subscribe to the Nation Network YouTube channel to watch all of our video breakdowns.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.